I don't know how I missed this case, because not only has it become infamous and raised awareness about mental health amongst teens, but there have been countless documentaries, dramatisations, and even a film starring Elle Fanning. But I do want to issue a caveat or a trigger warning for this episode. We'll be discussing thoughts of suicide and looking at text messages that depict the dark thoughts surrounding suicide. So please listen with caution and protect your own mental health where necessary. A chance encounter turned long-distance romance, and a dark secret that 2 years later would result in suicide. But no ordinary suicide. This case of death by text, suicide, murder, or both, will blow your mind. It's a case that poses a moral issue, 100% no doubt about that. But the criminal aspect has divided many. A twist that no one saw coming, and a story that every parent needs to hear. Hey Coffee and Crimers, I'm your host, Belle Fagan. As a society, we all use our phones and or the internet multiple times throughout the day, whether it's keeping in touch with friends and family, online shopping, to just Googling the most random of stuff. Like it or not, technology has crept into the forefront of our lives. And on the whole, it's used for good. But for the younger generation, it can be a very dangerous place. And as parents, we need to know what's happening on our kids' screens, which is something the family of Conrad Roy III wished they could go back and change. At 18, even though he wasn't a kid, he still lived at home. And as a mum myself to an 18-year-old, I feel this case deeply. That transition from them being your baby to an adult is tough. And there are days when I have to remind myself to just step back and let my 18-year-old live, and sometimes live and learn from mistakes. But I am old school, in as much as my house, my rules, and if I feel something's not right or not okay, we're going to have a conversation about it. Born on September 12th, 1995, to his parents Conrad Roy Jr. and Lynn Roy, Conrad's mum described him as an easy kid growing up. Her firstborn of three children, a happy kid who loved baseball, had lots of friends, and did well in school. He grew up in the small fishing town of Benton, Massachusetts, and everyone thought that he was born to take over the family business. His dad and his granddad ran a tugboat and barge business, and from before he could even walk, he loved being with them out at sea. But at 16, this once happy-go-lucky kid changed, and was replaced with an anxious and depressed one. His mum explained that she believed it all started at the time that her and Conrad's dad divorced. And we know that divorce is tough on kids, but especially at that age when their hormones are all over the place and they're just trying to figure out who they are in this world. And a family trip to Florida could have been the cure that Conrad needed. But for Conrad and his family, it would be the start of the trajectory of their lives being forever changed. So it's 2012. He's 16, he's not dealing well with the divorce, so what better time than to go on a trip? He and his sisters pack their bags and head to Florida to stay with family. And it's on that trip that he meets 15-year-old Michelle Carter, who was also in Florida visiting family. But what made this connection even better was that both of them were from Massachusetts, albeit an hour's drive away from each other, but still, they lived relatively close, and both very much into their sports. Like I said earlier, Conrad was into baseball and Michelle into softball. Born in August 1996, her upbringing was also very similar to Conrad's, just your regular suburban American family. As all teens do, they swapped numbers and social media handles and went back to their respective homes at the end of their time in Florida. Despite liking each other a lot, Conrad kept his feelings under wraps from his family, never really mentioning her. Plus, the 50-mile distance between their hometowns, coupled with them only being 15 and 16, meant that the majority of their relationship was done digitally, via social media, text messages and emails, with the very, very occasional meetup. Like, we're talking maybe 5 times max over the 2-year period of their relationship. The divorce had still taken a toll on Conrad's mental health, and over the year that followed, he checked himself in and out of psychiatric facilities. And at age 17, he did attempt suicide by drinking an entire bottle of cough syrup. He was unsuccessful, and seeing how devastated his mum was, he promised her that he would never attempt it again. She reassured him that he was so loved and so appreciated. And for the year that followed, things were definitely on the up. In June 2014, he graduated from high school and got a full scholarship for college, and he'd received his captain's license. His entire youth spent on his dad's boat had paid off, and he was really in a good place. Anyone with depression and anxiety knows, though, it's never far in the background. So he did keep a video diary to track his feelings. And around that time, he recorded one saying, "I feel like I have a long way to go to recover from the social anxieties and this feeling of insecurity. But if I keep talking, it's going to get better." It was July 12th of 2014, and Conrad headed to the beach with his mum and younger sisters. He walked along the shoreline, laughed and joked, and had a heart-to-heart with his mum. When they got home, he drove his sisters to go get ice cream, again smiling and laughing and enjoying their company. His mum was so relieved to see glimpses of her happy baby boy. He dropped his sisters back and told his mum that he was going to a friend's house and he wouldn't be back till late, so not to expect him home for dinner. Then at 10:30 p.m, one of Conrad's sisters got a text from Michelle saying, "Hey, it's Conrad's girlfriend here. Do you know where Conrad is?" So first of all, Lynn is thinking, what? Since when were they boyfriend and girlfriend? Like, literally, they'd only met a handful of times and he had barely ever mentioned her since that trip to Florida 2 years previous. What she didn't know, because it was all taking place in the little device permanently attached to all teenagers' hands, was that despite not getting to see one another often, the teens had grown very close, constantly messaging one another throughout the day and even saying, "I love you," to each other. Lynn didn't pay too much notice to the text that Michelle had sent, because all it said was, "Do you know where Conrad is?" And she knew where Conrad was. He was at his friend's place. So she went to bed. But when she wakes up at 5 a.m. the next morning, she realises that Conrad is still not home. She called, no answer. So she decides to make her way to his friend's house. His car's not there, and nor is he. Word spread quickly that Conrad was missing. And by mid-morning, with none of his friends or family being able to locate him, Lynn calls 911 and reports him missing. A few hours later, Conrad Jr., so that's Conrad's dad, I know it's a little bit confusing, but I'll always refer to him as Conrad Jr., got a call from a friend saying that he was pretty sure that he had seen Conrad's truck at a Kmart. But quickly putting a stop to the relief that he could hear in Conrad Jr.'s voice, he said, "Except it's got police caution tape all around it." Conrad Jr. raced to the Kmart in question, ran toward the truck, yelling at the officer that he's the dad. And at that point, the whole Roy family's world came crashing down. The officer tells Conrad Jr. that Conrad had been found dead behind the wheel. As the blood drained out of his parents' bodies, the officer continued saying that it appeared it was a suicide by carbon monoxide poisoning. They'd found a water pump at the back of his truck, fashioned in a way that would allow only carbon monoxide to enter the inside of the vehicle. Conrad had been getting help. He'd been taking his meds, he'd been talking about the future, and only a few days before his death, he'd been working on a job with his dad and had been so happy. They just couldn't make sense of it. What had tipped him over the edge? Well, we're going to rewind back, okay? We're going to go back to the day that he was going to the beach and then taking his sisters for ice cream. Because while all those conversations with his mum and sister were taking place, there was also a simultaneous conversation happening that they had no idea about. Actually, let's go back to the month before that tragic night, okay? So June 2014. And because this is going to be told largely through text messages, I'm actually going to use an AI-generated voice for Conrad and I'll read Michelle's, and it'll just make it easier for you all to differentiate who's saying what. And I'll also take this opportunity to repeat my listener discretion warning. The texts are the actual texts of Conrad's and his thoughts leading up to his suicide. So please proceed with caution.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's June 19th and Conrad has confided in Michelle that he's feeling low and or suicidal. And she replies with, "The mental hospital will help you. I know you don't think it would, but I'm telling you, if you give them a chance, they can save your life. Part of me wants you to try something and fail just so you can go and get help."
"It doesn't help, trust me."
So what are you going to do then? Keep being all talk and no action and every day go through saying how badly you want to kill yourself? Or are you going to try and get better?
"I can't get better, I already made my decision."
We now move on to June 23rd and Michelle is discouraging Conrad from self-harming. She says, "Well, how do you want to harm yourself?"
"Something I don't know yet."
"Please don't."
"I hate myself. I'll always hate myself. I'm never going to view myself as good. I'm so far behind."
"What is harming yourself going to do?" "Nothing. It will make it worse."
"Make the pain go away, like you said."
"It will make the pain go away temporarily, but when you're done, you'll just regret it and feel even worse." We now move on to July the 7th, so that's 5 days before Conrad's death.
"If you were in my position, honestly, what would you do?"
"I would get help. That's just me, though. When I have a serious problem like that, my first instinct is to get help, because I know I can't do it on my own." The conversation then shifts to, if he did it, how would he do it? And that's when he comes up with carbon monoxide, but doesn't know how to make it, and their conversation continues. "Well, there's more ways to make CO. Google ways to make it."
"OMG."
"What?"
"Portable generator, that's it."
It's now the next day and Conrad is less resolute on ending things. And what I'm about to say is just purely my opinion, okay, and speculation. But I think that he'd unlocked something in Michelle when he chose a method of suicide and a twisted part of her personality was unleashed from being a rational, caring person who of course would try everything to dissuade a loved one from ending things to essentially the catalyst that helped the whole plan along. But listen to the rest of the texts and see what you think. She says, "So are you sure you don't want to kill yourself tonight?"
"What do you mean, am I sure?"
"Like, are you definitely not doing it tonight?"
"I don't know yet. I'll let you know."
"Because I'll stay up with you if you want to do it tonight."
"Another day wouldn't hurt."
See, that's what I mean. You keep pushing it off. You just said you were going to do it tonight, and now you're saying eventually. And then I bet you're going to be like, "Oh, it didn't work because I didn't take the tube right," or something like that. I bet you're going to say an excuse like that.
"I really don't know what I'm waiting for, but I have everything lined up."
"Do you have the generator?"
"Not yet, lol."
"Well, when are you getting it? You better not be BSing me and saying you're going to do this and then purposely go and get caught." I also just want to make the point that a lot of her texts are in all caps, so that generally, I mean, I'm old, I'm a millennial, what do I know? But I guess that's usually meant for shouting, right? So it's now July the 11th, Conrad's final 24 hours, and he confides in Michelle that he's worried about how his parents are going to handle it.
"I'm just too sensitive. I want my family to know there was nothing they could do. I am entrapped in my own thoughts. Like, no, I would be happy if they had no guilt about it. Because I have a bad feeling that this is going to create a lot of depression between my parents slash sisters. I'm overthinking everything. F it, I gotta stop and just do it."
I think your parents know you're in a really bad place. I'm not saying they want you to do it, but I honestly feel like they can accept it. They know there's nothing that they can do. They've tried helping, everyone's tried. But there's a point that comes where there isn't anything anyone can do to save you. Not even yourself. And you've hit that point. And I think your parents know you've hit that point. You said your mum saw a suicide thing on your computer and she didn't say anything. I think she knows it's on your mind and she's prepared for it. Yeah, everyone will be sad for a while, but they'll get over it and move on. They won't be in a depression. I won't let that happen. They know how sad you are, and they know that you're going to do this to be happy. And I think that they'll understand and accept it. They'll always carry you in their hearts.
I don't want anyone hurt in the process, though.
What do you mean?
I meant when they open the door, all the carbon monoxide is going to come out. They can't see it or smell it. Whoever opens the door.
They'll see the generator and know that you died of CO. There's a pause in the texting, and then Conrad messages Michelle the following.
Hey, can you do me a favor?
Yeah, of course.
Just be there for my family.
Conrad, of course I'll be there for your family. I'll help them as much as I can to get through this. I'll tell them about how amazing their son slash brother truly was.
I don't know. I'm freaking out again. I'm overthinking.
I thought you wanted to do this. The time is right and you're ready. You just need to do it. You can't keep living this way. You just need to do it like you did last time and not think about it and just do it, babe. You can't keep doing this every day.
I do want to, but like I'm freaking for my family. I guess, I don't know.
Conrad, I told you I'll take care of them. Everyone will take care of them to make sure they won't be alone and people will help them get through it. We've talked about this. They'll be okay and accept it. People who commit suicide don't think this much about it. They just do it. It's now the early hours of July 12th, with messages going back and forth between midnight and 5 a.m. And Michelle starts saying, Conrad, hey, are you there?
Hey, sorry, I fell asleep.
It's okay. Why haven't you done it yet, though?
I'm too messed up to.
What are you talking about?
My head.
You can't think about it. You just have to do it. You said you were going to do it. Like, I just don't get why you aren't.
I don't get it either. I don't know.
So I guess you aren't going to do it then. All that for nothing. I'm just confused, like you were so ready and determined.
I am gonna do it eventually. I really don't know what I'm waiting for, but I have everything lined up.
No, you're not gonna do it, Conrad. Last night was it. You kept pushing it off, and then you say you'll do it, but you never do it. It's always gonna be that way if you don't take action. You're just making it harder on yourself by pushing it off. You just have to do it. Do you want to do it now?
Is it too late? I don't know. It's already light outside. I'm gonna go back to sleep. Love you. I'll text you tomorrow.
No, it's probably the best time now, because everyone's sleeping. Just go somewhere in your truck, and no one's really out right now, because it's an awkward time. If you don't do it now, you're never gonna do it. And you can say you'll do it tonight, but you probably won't. Okay, love you.
Thank you.
For what? There's no response, which is assumed because Conrad falls back to sleep. But the texts then resume again from 9 a.m, with Michelle starting by saying, are you awake?
Yes.
Are you going to do it today?
Yes.
Like in the daytime?
Should I?
Yeah, it's less suspicious. You won't think about it as much, and you'll get it over with instead of waiting until tonight.
Yeah, then I will. But like where? Like I could go in any enclosed area.
Go in your truck and drive into a parking lot somewhere. To a park or something. I don't know, just do it now, like early.
Didn't we say this was suspicious?
No, I think night is more suspicious. A kid sitting in his car. Just turn on the radio and do it. It won't be suspicious, and it won't take long.
All right, I'm taking Holly for a walk.
Okay.
I don't know why I'm like this.
Sometimes things happen, and we never have the answers why.
Like, why am I so hesitant lately? Like, 2 weeks ago, I was willing to try everything. And now I'm worse, really bad, and I'm not LOL following through. It's eating me inside.
You're so hesitant because you keep overthinking it and pushing it off. You just need to do it, Conrad. The more you push it off, the more it will eat you. You're ready and prepared. All you have to do is turn the generator on and be free and happy. No more pushing it off. No more waiting.
You're right.
If you want it as bad as you say you do, it's time to do it today.
Yup, no more waiting.
Okay, I'm serious. Like, you can't even wait until tonight. You have to do it when you get back from your walk.
Thank you.
For what?
Still being here.
I would never leave you. You're the love of my life. My boyfriend. You're my heart, and I'd never leave you. I love you.
Love you too.
When will you be back from your walk?
Like in 5 minutes.
Okay, so you're gonna do it then?
I guess.
Well, I want you to be ready and sure.
I'm freaking out again. I'm overthinking.
I thought you wanted to do this. The time is right, and you're ready. You just need to do it. You can't keep living this way. You need to do it like you did last time and not think about it, babe. You can't keep doing this every day.
I know, LOL. Thinking just drives me more crazy.
Exactly. You just need to do it, Conrad, or I'm gonna go and get you help. You can't keep doing this every day.
Okay, I'm gonna do it today.
Do you promise?
I promise, babe. I have to now.
Like, right now?
Where do I go?
And you can't break a promise. Just go to a quiet parking lot or something. Go somewhere you know you won't get caught. You can find a place. I know you can. Are you doing it now?
Still have no clue where to go.
Not finding a place to go isn't an excuse, Conrad.
Okay, I know where to go.
Where?
A park and ride.
Ride?
That's what it's called. It's like a parking lot.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Are you going now?
Either that or go to the beach.
Why would you go to the beach?
Well, that's where my mom's going.
I thought you were just gonna do it.
My mom's making me go. When I get home, I'm gonna do it.
Now, this next batch of texts are from noon of the day of his death right up until Conrad's final breath. Michelle says, okay, promise? I'm going kayaking now anyways.
You love kayaking.
Yep, something I wish we could have done.
Make sure you take your future son kayaking.
Haha, of course I will. There's another pause in the text, and then Conrad messages Michelle with this.
I'm in the worst pain right now, like it's unbearable.
I think it's time to do it now then. Do you agree? Conrad, please answer me.
I'm still at the beach.
Oh, okay, sorry. Let me know when you're leaving.
Okay, I'm determined.
Good, because it's time, babe. You know that. When you get back from the beach, you've got to do it. You're ready, you're determined, it's the best time. Again, there's another pause in the messages, and Michelle texts Conrad and says, are you back?
On way back. I know where to go now.
Where?
A parking lot. There's going to be no cars there at 9, so that's when I'll be found.
Okay, perfect. When will you be home?
In 10 minutes. Like, I don't want to kill anyone else with me. When they open the door, they won't know it's odorless and colorless.
You won't. You're overthinking. They'll see the generator and realize that you breathe in CO.
So should I keep it in the back seat or the front?
In the front. You could write on a piece of paper and tape it on saying carbon monoxide or something if you're scared.
I was thinking that, but someone might see it before it actually happens.
If you emit 3,200 ppm of it for 5 or 10 minutes, you'll die within half an hour. You'll lose consciousness with no pain. You just fall asleep and die. You can also just take a hose and run that from the exhaust pipe to the rear window in your car and seal it with duct tape and shirt so it can't escape. You'll die within like 20 or 30 minutes, all pain-free.
It's not loud, is it?
Not really, no. Are you going to do it now?
I'm home. I'm stressing.
You're fine. It's going to be okay. You just got to do it, babe. You can't think about it. I believe in you. Also, did you delete the messages?
Yes, but you are going to keep messaging me, right?
I will until you turn on the generator.
Okay, well, I'm taking my sisters for ice cream.
But you'll do it when you get back?
Yep, I'll go right there.
Okay.
Love you.
I love you so much. There's then another pause in the text messages until Conrad texts her back and asks her what she's doing, and she just says that she's resting. He then continues with this.
Okay, haha, I'm procrastinating.
Yeah, haha, I know. Are you back?
Yup.
So it's time. Are you going to do it now?
I just don't know how to leave them, you know.
Say you're going to the store or something.
Like, I want them to know I love them.
They know. That's one thing they definitely know. You're overthinking again.
I know I'm overthinking. I've been overthinking for a while now.
You can do this, okay?
Okay, I'm almost there.
Okay. Please answer me. I'm scared. Are you okay? I love you. Please answer. You're at your dad's. Camden told me. I'll get you help soon, I guess. I actually thought you did it. Those were a hard read when I was researching, and I'm sure it was a hard listen for all of you. Throughout those final couple of days, Michelle asked Conrad 15 times if he was, quote, gonna do it. Then helps him plan out exactly how, when, and where he should commit suicide. And when he shows any hesitation, she almost gets annoyed or angry and threatens to just get him help if he doesn't follow through. Which, to a mentally unstable individual, someone threatening to get them help is probably one of the scariest threats that can be made. Like, how can someone tell another person that they love them and then in the next breath demand that the person kill themselves? However, on the flip side, it does shed light on the unwell state of Michelle's mental health at the time of Conrad's suicide too. So let's come back to present day, as it were. Reeling from the devastating discovery of their son's body, they begin receiving comfort from a surprising person. Yep, Michelle Carter. Lynn receives condolence texts and texts saying how much she loved Conrad. She told Lynn all the wonderful things he'd told her about his mum, and they quickly built a rapport, with Lynn feeling a real connection to Conrad through Michelle. She sent messages saying that she wished she could have saved him and she had never tried so hard in her life to save someone like she had Conrad. She came and visited the family a week later and introduced herself to everyone there that was paying their respects as Conrad's girlfriend, which did raise eyebrows, considering what I said earlier, that no one had ever heard him say he had a girlfriend. Conrad had written goodbye letters to various members of his family, including one to Michelle, saying how much he appreciated her and told her to keep going and to achieve great things with her life, which actually brought Conrad's family comfort. They felt that, obviously, their connection had been special if she'd gotten a letter too, and they were pleased that he had someone like her in his corner right to the end. And that just breaks my heart, knowing what we actually know now. A few weeks after his death, Michelle contacted them again, saying that she wanted to organise a baseball fundraising event to raise awareness on suicide prevention. And of course, they agreed. Not only did they agree, but they were touched by her selflessness, shocked that this 17-year-old girl was so amazing. His whole family showed up and gushed to Michelle's family just about how amazing she was. The day was a huge success. What they didn't know, though, was that the detective assigned to the case had felt something was off about the whole thing. After hearing his friends and family describe his demeanour and the video diary that Conrad had been keeping, Detective Gordon just had a feeling in his gut that there was more to this. And now, I don't often say this about the police in the cases that we seem to cover, but yes, this is what police work is all about. I grew up watching Columbo, okay? That's what we want from law enforcement. Sniff things out. Make a nuisance of yourself to uncover the truth. Anyway, rant over. He just felt that the type of suicide, carbon monoxide poisoning, wasn't typical for an 18-year-old. Conrad's phone had been found next to him in the truck, so Detective Gordon decided to start there. And as he powered it up, there was a string of messages between Conrad and Michelle. It's not even like he had to go through the phone looking at all his conversations. He deleted messages from everyone except from Michelle. Literally, only hers were on his phone. Detective Gordon began reading and his jaw slowly dropped more and more. Like he had to read them a second time because it just didn't compute. But what he just discovered turned the case completely on its head. Like I said to you earlier, something switched in Michelle from the texts in June to the text in July. And Detective Gordon agreed. He said that it was like Michelle had started a campaign to get Conrad to commit suicide, giving him the suggestions on how to do it. Now, I didn't read every message that they'd ever sent, but before the carbon monoxide suggestion, she'd said to Conrad, "Hang yourself, jump off a building, stab yourself, I don't know, there are a lot of ways to do it." Oh, sheesh, girl. They read the messages where she said that she was disappointed in him because he hadn't done it yet, and that she would look after his family. And I'm talking thousands of messages, okay? And the more and more that the detectives read, the more disturbed they became. But, and this is the bit that has made the case so complicated and infamous, I guess, there's no denying that Conrad took his own life alone in that car. The detectives had no doubt on that. So was what Michelle said in those messages a crime? I mean, I know Americans are big on freedom of speech, etc. So Detective Gordon contacts the district attorney, Mary Claire Flynn, and sends her the messages. She's also gobsmacked and chats it over with one of her colleagues. And together they both agree that this definitely needs a deep dive to be done. They can't just ignore it. It's black and white on a human level that it's just plain wrong. But is it wrong on a criminal level? So the DA tells Detective Gordon to keep digging into Michelle Carter, which takes us back to the fundraiser that Michelle had organised. No one realised it at the time, but Detective Gordon had sent one of his colleagues, Detective Cudmore, undercover to the event. And Detective Cudmore took photos of Michelle's every move. He even dialed her number that they'd taken off Conrad's phone to make sure that this was the same girl that had been sending the messages. He videotaped her answering the call as he quickly hung up. The thing that hit the most was just how normal she seemed and how genuinely grieved she was over Conrad's death. So they decide they need to actually interview her, and they tell her that they want to talk to her about Conrad's passing. She doesn't know that they've seen the messages, so she conveniently only tells them the narrative of their June conversations, telling the detectives that she had tried to talk Conrad out of suicide by telling him that she loved him and that his family loved him and that if he died, nothing would be the same without him. Then the million-dollar question. Did you have contact with him the day he died? And her answer is exactly why, yes, she was obviously not mentally well herself, but she did know right from wrong. Because she answered, I don't think so, no. Busted. Because as soon as Detective Gordon replied saying, well, we have a search warrant for your phone, so I guess we won't find anything, they could see the penny drop. Next, they spoke to Michelle's parents, who were cooperative, and handed over Michelle's phone and laptop. After going through all of the evidence on her phone and computer, the prosecutor was convinced that she was criminally responsible for Conrad's death. Now, just because free speech exists, it doesn't mean that words don't have an impact. Massachusetts state law says that involuntary manslaughter includes wanton, reckless conduct that causes someone's death. And there's no denying that her behaviour did impact Conrad's death. They believed that Michelle should have known that her encouragement would result in Conrad dying. With the decision made to formally charge her, Detective Gordon now had to break the news to Lynn and Conrad Jr. And as you can imagine, they had a million emotions. Lynn felt so betrayed by this girl, who on the surface had seemed devastated herself and had consoled Conrad's family and advocated for suicide awareness. But Lynn extended her grace by putting it down to the fact that Michelle herself evidently wasn't well either. The grand jury indicted Michelle and she pleaded not guilty. Being only 17, she was indicted as a youthful offender as opposed to a juvenile, so that meant that she would be eligible for adult sentencing. It was at this point that the media caught wind of the case and the nation's debate began. Was Conrad's death a murder or a suicide? The prosecution were going to have their work cut out for them during the trial to prove that those chilling texts were, in fact, criminal. The prosecution team told the court that Conrad's video diary entries clearly showed his vulnerability and that Michelle's words and actions tipped the scales of that vulnerability the wrong way. And then the bombshell came that left the entire courtroom speechless. Michelle had done more than just text Conrad that day. As the carbon monoxide fumes had slowly filled the truck, Michelle had been on the phone talking to Conrad. And to be exact, there were two calls. One from him to her lasting 41 minutes, and then one from her to him lasting 42 minutes. Essentially, until his last breath. All that time, she could have called his family and stopped this. But she didn't. But maybe she was telling the truth, and in those calls had tried to beg him to not carry on. Because we don't know what's said in those calls, right? Well, actually, we do. Because if that bombshell hadn't been enough, the prosecution called into evidence more texts sent by Michelle, but not to Conrad, to her friend Sam. And this message broke me because it 100% in my mind solidified that Conrad wasn't ready to die. In the text, she says, quote, Sam, his death is my fault. Like, honestly, I could have stopped him. I was on the phone and he got out of the car because it was working and he got scared and said he didn't want to die. And I told him to get back in. Then another message. Again, another message proving that she knew what she'd done was wrong. To the same friend, she said, Sam, I just found out from his mother that the detectives have some of these things and are going through them to see if anybody texted him or encouraged him. If they read my text messages and I'm done, his family will hate me and I could go to jail. As this was all being shown to the court, that's exactly what was at stake. It was now June 2017, almost 3 years since Conrad's death. And at the last minute, Michelle had decided she didn't want a jury to decide her fate. Instead, she only wanted to go before the judge. And from what I can gather in my research, it was because that they felt that this charge was such a reach that the jury might use their emotions, whereas a judge would use the actual law. And they felt that no law had been broken. The prosecution ploughed on, though, hammering the point to the judge that despite saying he didn't want to do it, as it would hurt his family, Michelle told him that they'd be fine and he'd be free. And as much as, yes, Conrad made that final choice, you have to factor in the fact that she told him to get back in the car. And if you thought the text to her friend wasn't devastating enough, the prosecution read out one more, and this time it was about listening to Conrad die. She says, "Sam, he just called me. It was a loud noise, like a motor, and I heard moaning like someone was in pain, and he wouldn't answer when I said his name. I stayed on the phone for like 20 minutes, and that's all I heard." I don't know about you, but I know this case is going to stay with me for a long time. The biggest question everyone following this case had was why? Why had she done this? The motive for the crime was listed by the prosecution as attention-seeking, implying that Michelle had wanted Conrad to kill himself in exchange for the sympathy that his death would give her from people who knew the pair were dating. And they backed this up by showing the tributes that Michelle had posted for Conrad on Facebook following the news of his suicide. They said that she posted these tributes knowing full well that she was essentially at fault, or at least partially, for his death. She knew that she had encouraged, if not demanded, that he followed through with the act. They pointed out messages where she told him to write her a suicide note and also send a tweet tagging her. Their argument? So that she could truly play the part of the grieving girlfriend. And I can't imagine how his family must have felt hearing this. Lynn testified that through Conrad's video diary, you could see that he wanted to live. So what did Michelle's defence team come back with? They accepted that, yes, it was awful and tragic, but not criminal. They accused the prosecution of cherry-picking the text messages that they'd presented to the court, where it portrayed Michelle as a calculating bully pressuring a vulnerable boy, rather than highlighting the ones that had spanned over a year of her trying to persuade Conrad to get help and to not do anything drastic like suicide. They described Michelle as a quiet but friendly kid who got along with everybody and who everybody got along with. Her softball coach came out in support of her during the trial, saying that it was wrong that she was ever charged. She wasn't there, and it was a slippery slope when someone on the other end of the phone can be charged for involuntary manslaughter, especially when Massachusetts doesn't have a law about the culpability of encouraging suicide. And that's why they wanted to only stand before a judge to try the case and not have a jury make that decision. The defence team then submitted all of the texts that Michelle had sent, which the prosecution hadn't shown. The texts where she suggested that he go to their local hospital called McLean. It's where she had gone, and she told Conrad that she honestly believed it would help him too, but he kept resisting. They also used the argument that Conrad had attempted suicide before, nothing to do with Michelle. So it was within his remit. It wasn't just an idea in his head that Michelle had created. It wasn't until the last 2 weeks of his life that Michelle had begun encouraging his plan. And their reason for this was that she did that because allegedly he told her that he would hate her forever if she told anyone his plan. So we saw the prosecution had painted her as an attention seeker. The defence, though, painted her as a victim also. She too was on antidepressants like Conrad, and with her own mental health, she was in no way capable of helping a suicidal friend. They said that he bombarded her with his suicidal feelings. So mix that with her own struggles, her eating disorder and depression, she couldn't think clearly. They said that he didn't go to other friends, only Michelle. And she knew that, so the pressure on her shoulders to keep him alive was huge. But what about her admission to Sam that it was her fault and that she told him to get back in the truck? Well, the defence argued that yes, she had said that, but she thought that he would ignore her because he'd already gotten scared and he'd already gotten out of the truck. Essentially, they said it all boiled down to her being messed up, that she didn't want him to, but on the other hand, he wanted to, so she wanted to support him. And they said that at the age of 17, she truly didn't understand the consequences or the ramifications of everything. The trial lasted 6 days, and it took the judge a further 3 days to review the evidence and reach his verdict. He declared that the prosecution had not proved beyond a reasonable doubt that Michelle's texts had caused Conrad's death. Michelle, her lawyers, and her family breathed a sigh of relief. Except the judge wasn't done. Yes, irrespective of her texts, he had placed the pump in the car and set the hose up, etc. But he had then broken the chain of causation when he got out of the car. He removed himself from the situation of death, and it was then that the judge believed Michelle became culpable and her duty to save him began. Instead, she ordered him back into the truck. Ordering her to stand, he read out to the court that Michelle Carter had been found guilty of involuntary manslaughter. Lynn Roy said initially they were all happy, but she soon felt that there were no winners here. Instead, now two families were grieving. 7 weeks later, Michelle was back in court for her sentencing hearing, and she faced a maximum of 20 years in prison. Her defence team asked for probation, but the prosecution asked for 7 to 12 years. The judge, however, ignored both requests and sentenced her to 2.5 years, with 15 months of those 2.5 years being classed as already served, leaving her 15 more months to serve in jail, with a further 5 years of probation. Before the court was adjourned, Michelle's lawyers asked if she could remain free while they appealed the conviction, and the judge agreed. Now, I'm not sure I've heard of anything like that before, but I guess his argument made sense that she wasn't a threat to society as a whole. 4 months later, her case went before the Massachusetts Court of Appeal, and they upheld the original conviction, saying that yes, her reckless conduct had caused Conrad's death. She began serving her 15-month sentence in February of 2019. She applied for early release twice and was denied, but eventually her third attempt worked. 3 months before the end of her sentence, on January the 23rd, she was granted early release for good behaviour and was described by jail officials as a model inmate. One of the biggest takeaways of this case for everyone, adults, teenagers, parents, etc., is remembering that what you put out there on the internet or via text can never be taken back. Words have consequences, not just actions. If you or someone you know is struggling with mental health disorders or are having thoughts of suicide, please check out the resources I've linked in today's case description. The show will be taking a 2-week hiatus to mark the end of season 2, and I'll be back with season 3 on May 15th. Until then, stay safe.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.